Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Alex Schumacher. When I was younger, I desperately wanted to be a movie director. My parents, in support of this passion, bought me a video camera. As a result, the computer back at my parents' house is just filled with dozens and dozens of movies I directed and made my brother star in. There's something special about movies, something magical about them that makes us want to try to make them ourselves and get lost in their world just a little bit longer. On this episode of Real College Podcast, we are looking at movies. We've got favorites, festivals, baseball, and more here on Real College Podcast. We often feel that our favorite movie says something about us, whether it be good or bad. And so that's why this week we sent reporter Casey McCabe out to ask people what their favorite movie is.
Even though it is near the end of the year, it is always nice to make a new friend. Sometimes, however, it can be hard to get the ball rolling when talking to someone new. One of my favorite things to do when I'm talking to new people is ask about their favorite movie. With the help of Radio K, I was able to hit the streets and expand my knowledge of cinema with the help of my fellow students.
Hello, what is your name?
My name is Caitlin.
And what is your favorite movie?
The Lovely Bones.
Why do you like it?
I really like the story behind the movie, and I like movies that are more like thriller and mystery-like. So, I don't know, it's just really thrilling, and I like the suspense in it.
Who's your favorite actor / actress in the movie?
Mark Wahlberg.
Hello, what is your name, sir?
My name is Jeremy.
And what is your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is La La Land.
Why is that your favorite movie?
I think it's a beautiful story with it's beautiful acting too, good songs.
All right, what is your name?
Ethan.
And what is your favorite movie, sir?
The Giver.
Who is your favorite actor or actress in the movie?
Jeff Bridges.
What do you like about that movie?
Excellent imagery, this contrast between light and dark and color and black and white.
Could I just ask you what your name is?
Isan.
And what is your favorite movie?
Karate Kid, the one with Jaden Smith.
Oh, nice, nice. That's excellent. Why is that your favorite movie?
Because I like the message behind the movie, and who doesn't love Jaden Smith? And Never Say Never is one of my favorite songs.
That's terrific. Have you seen the original one as well?
Yeah, with Mr. Miyagi, I have.
Yep, and you like the new one better?
Yeah, new and improved, baby.
And then what is your name?
Zach.
And what is your favorite movie, Zach?
Top Gun.
And why is Top Gun your favorite movie?
Top Gun's a good mixture of fun and action, and it's very masculine.
That's excellent. Who's your favorite actor in Top Gun?
Tom Cruise, of course.
What is your name?
Ellie.
Yeah. And what is your favorite movie, Ellie?
Probably Titanic.
That's excellent. Who's your favorite actor or actress?
Definitely Leonardo DiCaprio, then.
That's excellent. Why is it your favorite movie?
It's just really emotional, and he's a great actor, and I love him. Yeah.
All right, so what is your name?
Ben.
All right, Ben, what is your favorite movie?
It's got to be John Carpenter's The Thing.
Why is that your favorite movie?
Oh, man, because my dad showed me that movie when I was like 6, freaked the hell out of me, but it opened a door of horror movies for the rest of my life, and it's become classic.
That's excellent. Who's your favorite actor? Who is your favorite actor or actress in the movie?
In that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
All right, what is your name, sir?
Jeff Robert Graybow.
Excellent. And what is your favorite movie, Jeff?
Favorite movie of all time is the first Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Why is that your favorite movie?
Because it evokes the imagination of a child, and I like Gene Wilder's hair.
Reporting for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.
For 38 years now, the Minneapolis St. Paul Film Society has hosted an international film festival. As the name suggests, this festival includes works from filmmakers all over the world, includes filmmakers from Ethiopia, Japan, and, well, right here in Minnesota. Producer Lizzie Ritchie gives us a closer look at this year's film festival.
The annual Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival is on its 38th run and growing more than ever. This year's lineup consisted of 273 films, with over 45% of which being directed by women.
As a community, we are moving forward. We're making better films. I think the films are more kind of significant on every level in terms of quality of production, in terms of the gutsiness of the subjects that the filmmakers are willing to are engaging, and also the range, the international range of reach of what Minnesota feature documentary filmmakers are involved with.
The best comparison I heard was from a woman who's been going to the film festival since it began in the 80s, and she said it's kind of like a heartbeat. When it first began, it started with just a couple of screenings at just a few theaters. It then grew and expanded to all over Minneapolis, but at one point, again, they pulled it back into just screenings at St. Anthony Main. And now they have grown again and are expanding all over Minneapolis and St. Paul. Basically, she made the comparison of the growth of the festival over the years to the way that a heart pulses.
This festival is important, and I think it's been growing, and we've had a lot of really strong films this year, and we're coming down to the last days, and I know that's kind of sad for some people.
Every year, the festival tries to expand more and more on community outreach and focusing on lifting other local businesses up. It isn't just screening movies, but also working with other businesses to host parties, special events, and discussion panels to enrich the MSPIF experience. Every year, they also recognize a Minnesota filmmaker with a cinematic arts tribute.
Another category that we started several years ago at the Film Society and the Film Festival was the Minnesota Cinematic Awards, which goes to somebody involved in the film industry that's actually from here, who's now branched themselves out of the community but still is tapped in. This year we're doing the award goes to Scott Z. Burns.
Some of his latest work includes The Informant, An Inconvenient Truth, and his latest film, The Report, which is set to be released by Amazon in the fall of 2019. MSPIF also wants to encourage young filmmakers in the future of film, so they have a program called The Next Wave, comprised of a youth jury that votes and decides on the winners of this competition.
It's our program for young people. It really is a program that's created by and for young people. This year we had over 500 submissions accepted both nationally and internationally from filmmakers under 18. This is a short film program. From those 500, we sourced 60 semifinalists that were reviewed by our selection committee, which is a partnership with MIA, Minneapolis Institute of Arts student art team. And those 60 finalists turned into 7 finalists.
The 2 winners of this category were Meeting at 5:30, made by Daria Levinchenko, for the Excellence in Filmmaking Award, and Gossamer, made by Jeanette Fantone, for the Jury's Choice Award. Along with this award, there are many others given out to the many films that screened during the festival for their strong narrative and uniqueness. But a competition this year that stuck out was the Spotlight competition focusing on disruption.
The Spotlight competition is comprised of 5 films that were in our disruption theme. Each year the festival selects, or we put together a theme of films that about political topics that are emerging in the world. This year we chose disruption because, well, there's a lot of filmmakers out there who are, you know, looking into this topic. The films are about people who get in the way of structures of power.
So this year, for the 5 films, we have 2 honorable mentions, Freedom Feels and Whispering Truth to Power. And the winner of the Spotlight Disruption Documentary Competition is Ghost Fleet by director Shannon Service and Jeffrey Walter. So thank you.
If you did miss the film festival, there will be Best of Fest screenings going on until the 25th of April. And some films have been picked up by Netflix, Amazon, and other platforms for major distribution, so that is something to also look forward to. I would have to say the best part about the Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival is that 90% of the films you would never have another chance to see them again. They bring films from all over the globe that are shaping the cultures of other countries and giving them a voice and a chance to be heard here. Again and again, MSPIF is bringing diverse voices to Minnesota and encouraging unique perspectives to share their own story.
Despite being far away and much colder than Hollywood, Minnesota has a surprisingly thriving film scene. Reporter Hannah Dove sat down with one local filmmaker to talk about his experiences making films.
This is Hannah Dove reporting for RCP's film episode, and I am here with Angelo Volpe, local Minneapolis film creator, and I'm going to be asking him a couple of questions. When did you start making films?
2009, I think that's the first time. I discovered that I could get a digital camera fairly cheaply, and I had never gotten a Mac before, but I heard Mac had an iMovie program that was pretty easy to use. So I got a camera, I got the iMac, and I shot a little film called Navish Cat, which is the name of my company, Navish Cat Productions. And then I made a couple of really short films just to learn how to do things, and then I shot my first feature in 2010.
How many films have you made since 2010?
Features? I'm working on my fifth, but it's actually my sixth because one is still indefinitely lost in post. It might not ever get in there, so I don't really count that. And then I made a film series, the Gatto series, of five films that featured this magical cat, Luca, the cat who inspired Namish Cat Productions.
Do you consider yourself to be part of the wider Minneapolis film scene, or are you kind of a lone wolf?
Definitely a lone wolf. I don't do well with groups. I never have. Partly because I'm severely introverted, I like solitude a lot. And part of it is, when I was in college, I met some writers, and one of the things I noticed, and it could have been just a fluke of the people, that when I hung out with writers, they talked about writing, but they didn't write. And I'm the guy who writes. So I have this secret fear that if I'm around creative people, they're gonna just talk about being those people instead of doing that, and it could be completely nonsense.
What do you look for in an actor slash actress within your films?
Number one, believe it or not, is reliability. I need to know that the person's gonna do what they say they're gonna do. And I think that trumps everything, including talent. I work with a lot of non-actors, and they turn out really well because I pick them because I know them, and I believe in them, and they see that. And then I'm really good at coaching them into seeing similarities either in the character or in the situations that the character's facing. And I try to bring that out in them, and I've been pretty successful. There's only been two or three times where I miscast a person that I really regretted it, but usually that doesn't happen.
I remember hearing you say you don't want any of your freshman writing students in your film.
I don't let current students be in my films just because I think there'd be a conflict of interest. That A, they would think they're getting extra credit, or B, there'd be times when there's a conflict that they have work for me to do in the class, but I want them to do the film. I don't want to put myself in that situation.
Do you mostly work with university students?
I work with a lot of former students, but the reason I work with former students is I already know them. And they're usually students that have kept in touch with me, so I've not only taught them for at least one semester, but we've eaten together, we've talked together, so I have a sense of what they care about. The outside people are either recommended by a former student or recommended by somebody I already know and respect. So I think of casting the way the mafia thinks of people. You either recruit them directly or you get them from somebody who can vouch for them.
Have you ever entered your films into any film competitions, any film viewings?
I've never entered them in a festival, even though I'm very likely to do it with this one. I got my wife who's pushing me really hard, and she's not the only one. And I think this film has a really big message that I want to get out to the world. So what I've done in the past is I've made the film, I've gotten a room at the U for free, and I've shown it for free. My last feature, LSD 4, Lucifer's Suicide, Day 4, I had 100 people. That was my biggest premiere ever, and that was phenomenal. That was really good.
Do you try to put a message in every one of your films?
I don't know about message, but I know that every film of mine, even the comedies, they have questions. Because I make films that get people to think. I like entertainment. Most of my friends are snobs about action movies. I think there are action movies that ask questions that I care about. And so I make things that are enjoyable, at least they're enjoyable to me, but I want the audience to leave the theater thinking about different questions. Why did a character do something, or why was this an issue? I think that's a good thing. And I don't think that's at odds with entertainment or fun.
When you first have a movie idea, what is the start of your process in making that film?
the characters, usually the lead character, and I do something that I named when I was a freshman in college, walking the character. I walk around. At that time, I walked around campus at Virginia Tech because it's a beautiful place. Or as I got older, I'd walk around the mall. Now I can walk around anywhere. And I try to look at my surroundings, whatever they are, from the point of view of that character, because it gets me in touch with the character.
How do you make these special effects, or how do you utilize settings in a way that engrosses people into the scene?
That's tricky. I have this one friend. She was the girlfriend, now she's the wife of a former student, Morgan. And Morgan just happened to be fascinated with makeup effects. And so when I was shooting one of my films, Morgan said, I'd like to do this. And I actually ended up convincing her mother to join the film too. That's the film that never got released because it has major holes in it. So I'm pretty new to special effects. And I'm really old school about special effects. I like doing things that you don't have to mess around in post-production, or you have to do things very little in that regard. In terms of settings, one of the most difficult things for me as a filmmaker is finding locations. That's really rough. But I share this idea that Tarantino has and Mamet has. He's originally a playwright. I like dialogue, and I think dialogue can bring an audience into the film. And so I'm actually fascinated by films that have a very confined space or a very limited setting, because it forces you to bring in the audience when you don't have all this visual stuff going on. The other thing is I like interior scenes. Maybe it's just the last couple of films because of the themes involved. They give this claustrophobic feeling that lends itself. Like in my last feature film, LSD4, this terrorist who used the name Lucifer, he turns off all the cell phones, and then later he kills the internet. And so most of the film, he's in my basement being interrogated by a female FBI agent who needs to get inside his head to get him to turn the stuff back on. And he does this with computers. And so there's this battle of wits between this man and this woman with some really heavy stakes. And there's other scenes going on in the world, because I look at the effects in the government, in criminal culture, and in mainstream people.
Do you have kind of an MO?
I deal with a lot of dark themes. I like philosophical questions, and a lot of those philosophical questions ask really dark questions. The meaning of life in very different ways, the meaning of honesty. This film, Butch, deals a lot with family and how far you can push family. And most of the families in this are not blood family, they're found family, but I think those families are very real and important. So I think if I have an MO, it's that people leave my films asking a lot of questions. I judge good films by how many times I can watch them and still see something new.
When did you first get the idea for your latest film or film in production, Butch?
That's a little tricky because I can't give you the exact date, but I worked on the script for 2 years, which is ungodly long for me. So it must have been at least 2 years or more before that. I had a directed study with a gay student, and the focus of his argument is what the gay male community should do about hate crimes against the larger LGBT community. He took a very peaceful view of it, education and so on. And at a certain point, he ran into the statistic that really blew my mind, that about 60%, maybe even more, but even at 60%, of all hate crimes target gay men. I never knew that. I always figured it was black people or Jewish people, either religion or race. Now remember, there's intersectionality, so the gay men could also be targeted because of religion or race or something like that. And so as he was developing this paper, I started thinking, how would Malcolm X react to this situation where he believes that you don't just sit around and let violence be committed against you? And then I started thinking about, well, what if this guy, there's a line in Message to the Grassroots where Malcolm X says, if America teaches us to be violent in defense of her, then it is okay for us to do whatever is necessary to protect our own, defend our own people. So I started thinking, well, what if the main character of this movie is a former Marine? He's got special skills, and the Marines I like in particular because they go in first and they don't blink. A lot of times they don't come out, but they go in. They run into battle. They don't run and hide at all. And so I have this guy who, he's in the closet because he wants to teach in a small town school in Minnesota. He's a former Marine. He's in this situation. And then I started thinking, there's this accident where his brother gets murdered in what looks like an anti-gay hate crime, and it triggers all this different identity crisis, for lack of a better word, where he starts thinking, I could use my skills in a different way to make a bigger difference. And that triggers everything, right?
Do you often get movie ideas from students, both past and present?
No, but I get movie ideas from conversations, and on a given day I have a lot of conversations with students. It's the conversations I have with different people, and it's the one-on-one conversation. I don't like talking in a group because most people censor what they're saying. And
what is your favorite film of all time?
And so my all-time favorite movie is Blade Runner, the international cut. I hate the director's cut. That everyone loves, I can't stand it. It asks really deep questions. That's one of the things I really like about it. And I consider it a pretty theological film. There's a scene in there where Deckard, who's hunting the replicants, they're these genetically engineered humanoids. Well, one of them, Roy, who's my favorite character in the film, he's the leader of this band of replicant rebels. He goes to the guy who created him, Tyrell, and it's like man meeting his god. And the scene is, it gives me goosebumps. I've seen the movie 50 times. Just mentioning it gives me goosebumps. It just really goes at the, we're in the situation, we're on this planet. Whether I believe in God or not, I don't think it really matters. And all you're trying to do is make some meaning out of what you have. And I think that's really,
if people would be interested in seeing your films, where would they look?
Viewings is the best. In the past I've burned a lot of DVDs, so I've given DVDs to people that asked for them. And a lot of the ways I do that is I burn DVDs for people in the film so that they can go and show them with their friends and stuff. I'm working my way into online. I'm a little nervous about that whole thing because anybody can access it. I don't like that idea. But I'm going to try to start making more viewings. Like, I have enough films now where I could have a double feature or something like that. I think that would be really cool.
This has been Hannah Dove with RCP signing off.
Finally, if you're still looking for some good movie recommendations, here are Grant and Trask from the Sports Hour here at Radio K, running down a list of some great and, well, some not-so-great baseball films.
Hello, everybody. This is Trask Angel and Grant Sandberg from the Sports Hour here on Radio K. We're doing an episode for RCP this week, part of their films episode, and we're going to be talking baseball movies. Grant, what is your favorite baseball movie?
Favorite baseball movie?
Can you single one out?
I'd say Field of Dreams.
Great choice.
Thank you. I mean, late 80s film, for those who don't know. Kevin Costner is in it, and I mean, I like it because it's a mix. It's almost like it's pretty much historical fiction because there are people in it who are real players, real scenes, but then there's also, obviously, it's not a 100% true story with historic players coming out of cornfields. So
right. And you can even go visit the field.
That is one thing I have never done, but I've always wanted to do. It's middle of nowhere Iowa, though, right?
Yeah, I think. I might be mistaken. Maybe an 8-hour drive from the cities.
All right, we'll make a field
down
trip.
Down in Iowa? Yeah, might be a good trip.
We should
host
a Sports Hour episode there sometime.
We could.
Anyways, so another movie, I'd say I'm looking at a top 25 list here. I want to get your opinion on if you've ever seen For the Love of the Game.
I have.
Another Kevin Costner film.
Another Kevin Costner film.
That was more recent. I think that was late 90s. And I really like that one because it is, the premise pretty much is he's throwing a perfect game, which in baseball is pretty much like, that's the best thing you could possibly do as a pitcher. It's only happened 28 times or something like that. And while he is pitching, his whole life is flashing back to him growing up as a kid, playing catch with his dad, to his life in the big leagues, and he's an older player now with his girlfriend, losing his girlfriend, stuff like that. So it's a great movie because it kind of brings together both the baseball side of things, also the family side of things, which obviously Field of Dreams also does. And I feel like in general, I mean, we're talking not just baseball movies here, like films in general. I feel like that does a good job of bringing together, whether it's sports or the real part of the movie, but also like making it connect with you as a person, because I mean, you can see yourself in playing catch with your dad growing up and stuff like that.
Right, right. Some other honorable mentions that are worth talking about. The Sandlot, released in 1993, a classic that most people have seen.
I have seen that maybe once. Don't really, really remember it that well. I know, it's kind of weird.
Really good. Would recommend watching. About a group of kids coming together, rallying, making friends over the summer. Good movie. Thoroughly enjoy it.
Two other ones I want to talk about. One would be 42, which relatively new movie, came out 2013. Obviously about Jackie Robinson and how Branch Rickey, who was Dodgers' owner and kind of general manager type back then, was able to bring Jackie Robinson, the first black player, into the Major League Baseball. And, I mean, obviously that was a big deal. I mean, we just had Jackie Robinson Day a week ago or so, where everyone in the major leagues wears 42 for a day. And so I think baseball has so much rich history. It's neat that they're able to make movies really telling these amazing stories, which leads me to my next one, which is obviously A League of Their Own. I was looking at the Field of Dreams trying to say A League of Their Own. But A League of Their Own, I mean, obviously, great movie, talks about when all the women had came in, played baseball, and really it showed that, I mean, people, they were great games to watch. It was a fun environment. The cast is amazing. Tom Hanks does an excellent job as manager. And it just tells a terrific story, and I think it's portrayed in a great way as well.
I agree. Speaking of recent movies, have you ever seen Moneyball?
Yes, that was on my list to talk about next. Another great movie.
Great cast, too. Jonah Hill and Brad Pitt. I mean, a great movie, especially if you love not necessarily the game of baseball, but what goes into it. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, the A's in the early 2000s really changed the game to how, I mean, everyone talks about sabermetrics now. The A's were pretty much the first team who started that all back in the early 2000s, and it worked for them, so that's why people are still doing it now. And another kind of movie, like we said, that's a real thing that happened, and they were able to turn it into this perfect movie of how it really showed what happened between, I mean, sabermetrics, and also just, again, getting back to, like, Billy Beane, the general manager of the Oakland A's, how he was a player, that didn't work out well. Now he tries to see his kid all the time, but it's difficult because he's divorced. So it's being able to mix the sports and then also real life into the movies, I think, also gets into it. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on, Trask? We're about 5 minutes in here.
I would like to mention a real stupid comedy, but a good one to watch with your friends.
I'm worried what you might say here.
The Benchwarmers.
I hate that movie.
Really?
I've seen it a few times. The first time I was like probably 8 years old and I thought it was hilarious. And I now watching it, it's so bad.
It's dumb comedy.
It's really dumb.
I think it's comedy. Enjoyable to watch, you know, once every couple of years with your friends.
Maybe we'll have to watch it.
Definitely not the same caliber as the movies we've mentioned before, but one to mention at least.
Lastly, Bull Durham, obviously, kind of classic with all great names in it, and also and kind of shows the people struggling in the minor leagues and what that was all like and stuff like that, which really still to this day is playing in the minor leagues, bussing everywhere is tough. And, I mean, everyone there is just trying to get their dream of making it to the majors. So, any last thoughts, Trask, on the Sports Hours film edition here?
No, I think that gives a pretty good synopsis of baseball movies and ones to look out for if you're looking for a baseball movie with the family over the weekend.
All right, thank you so much for listening.
That is all for this episode of Real College Podcast. Thanks to Casey McCabe, Lizzie Ritchie, Hannah Doug, Grant Sandberg, and Trask Angel. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It is produced by Liv Riggins, Nathan Fervoy, Lizzie Ritchie, and Ben Hallam. Alex Schumacher is the host and managing editor. All episodes of Real College Podcast can be found online at radiok.org or on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thanks for listening.